Good morning, everybody. This is Lori Wilson with you on Community Voice. Happy Thursday. It is the 29th of November, and our guest today, who is appearing by the miracle of Skype, is Dr. Jerry Newcomb, who is the senior producer of a... You know what, Dr. Jerry Newcomb, why don't you tell everybody? You have such a wonderful bio. I want to hear it from you.
Oh, thank you very much, Lori. Good to be with you. Well, the... Basically, I work for the legacy ministry of the late Dr. D. James Kennedy. In fact, it's even called D. James Kennedy Ministries. He was a conservative Presbyterian minister, and I had the privilege to write several books with him, including What If Jesus Had Never Been Born? And I've had the privilege to write 30 books now, write or co-write. And my latest book is called American Amnesia, which is all about how America has really forgotten God, and yet God is the source of our rights, which is... You know, enshrined in our very birth certificate, the Declaration of Independence, but people seem to forget all these things.
We were talking before the show about some sort of revisionist history that you identify and write about with regard to, well, let's start with Thomas Jefferson, misreading Jefferson.
Sure. Well, Thomas Jefferson is the one who wrote a letter, a private letter, using the phrase "a separation of church and state" and saying that this is what the First Amendment meant. And he wrote that in 1802 when he was president of the United States. It was just a private letter and so forth. Jefferson wasn't there when they wrote the Constitution, and he wasn't there when they wrote the Bill of Rights, which includes the First Amendment. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of strange that the Supreme Court in 1947 would then use him as the key arbiter of the separation of church and state. But even there, it's kind of taking things out of context, because the very letter that gives us this phrase, the separation of church and state, which has now been applied to the First Amendment, which says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, that very letter violates the separation of church and state by the means, interpretation of to which it's applied today. And here's what I mean. At the end of the letter, he says, "I covet your prayers." He doesn't use that word, but he says, "I desire for you to pray to the God of, you know, heaven for me, and I will pray for you." And it's like, wait a minute. Here he is writing from the White House, talking about prayer to God. I mean, that's a violation of the separation of church and state. I mean, it gets so ridiculous, Lori. The birth certificate of America itself, the Declaration of Independence, would be essentially unconstitutional by the definition of these strict separation of church and state people who say, no, there should be no aspect of God in the public arena. The Declaration of Independence mentions God four times. Our Constitution mentions the Declaration of Independence. You know, it says this was done in the 12th year of independence. You know, mm-hmm. It's predicated mm-hmm. on the Declaration of Independence. And the Constitution itself mentions this is done in the year of our Lord, 1787, by these strict separation of God and state people definitions, maybe even the Constitution would be unconstitutional. I mean, it's absurd. It doesn't fit the traditions of America. It doesn't fit the fact that the founding fathers saw fit to hire, at taxpayers' expense, chaplains yes. for the military and chaplains for the legislature. We still have those, by the way. They've been challenged, but when they went all the way up to the Supreme Court said, well, you know, the founding fathers did this before we even became a nation. So why are we trying to change that now?
Well,
so
I
feel like the strict way in which people are trying to kick God out of the public school. Oh, you can't have a Charlie Brown Christmas in a public school because it mentions Jesus or something mm-hmm. like that. Oh, that's a terrible violation. The founders would be totally upset. That's not right. They just wouldn't be when you look at the facts of history.
Well, I have heard many times a story, and maybe you can debunk it or contextualize it, that Thomas Jefferson seems famously to have amended the Bible, the New Testament, so that he kind of erased all of the miracles that...
I wouldn't word it that way.
Okay.
Here's what he did, and he did this later in life, but he did it in two phases. The first phase was in 1803 when he was in the presidency. He was responsible for the Louisiana Purchase. Now there were lots of Indians in American territory, and many of them were not exposed to Jesus. He felt that the Indians would misunderstand a lot of stuff related to Christology and the Trinity and doctrines like that. But he thought that they ought to learn about the teachings of Jesus, because he said there's no greater morality than the teachings of Jesus Christ. And we ought to teach them about that. So rather than focus on, the Trinity or the deity of Jesus, what Jefferson did was he compiled sayings of Jesus Christ so that the Indians could learn about the teachings of Jesus and then not be, be burdened with trying to understand Christology, which Christians have been fighting over, and the Trinity have been fighting over for centuries anyway, right. If that makes sense.
Right.
And there are, by the way, there are references to miracles in some of the very verses that he chose. So it's not an accurate picture to say, well, that Jefferson, took the Bible and edited out the miracles. That's kind of the way it's presented. It's more like Jefferson wanted the Indians to learn about the teachings of Jesus. Then later, by the way, in 1820, he took his own work and he expanded it. And what he did was he put it in columns. He had, on the one hand, he had the verses of Jesus, the sayings of Jesus in English. And on the other hand, he had those same things in three other languages. So here is a guy studying the teachings of Jesus Christ for his own personal edification. He loved that, by the way. There were witnesses that said he was, perusing his book. He found comfort, in these teachings of Jesus, especially after his wife had died and one of his daughters had died. Can I read to you the title page of the Jefferson Bible, so-called, which was never published, by the way? But this is the title page in his own handwriting.
Yeah, let's hear
from
it.
From the 1804. Do I have time to read that?
Absolutely, and then we'll go to our first pick. But yeah, this is fascinating. Go ahead.
The Philosophy of Jesus of Nazareth, extracted from the account of his life and doctrines as given by Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, being an abridgment of the New Testament for the use of the Indians, unembarrassed with matters of fact and faith beyond the level of their comprehensions.
Oh, boy. That's a very Enlightenment-era title.
Jefferson was this big skeptic. Jefferson interacted with Christian clergymen all the time and read Bibles. He got a copy of the Septuagint, which is the Greek Testament, the Greek translation of the Old Testament produced before Jesus came. I mean, the guy was a scholar, even, of biblical stuff. And yes, later in life, he had some serious doubts, but don't read into the earlier Jefferson the doubts of the later Jefferson.
So this is one sort of chapter or one transcript of a broadcast. Is that right? In your book, your latest book called American Amnesia.
Well, American Amnesia is a collection of essays. One of my responsibilities at the ministry is I write a column every week, and so this is a collection of essays all related to America. Part one deals with remembering our Judeo-Christian roots as a nation. Part two is renewing our role as active Christian citizens and citizens of goodwill. And then part three is recovering our religious liberty in the face of a militant secularism.
Boy, that's a lot to do. So where do we find your columns? At what website can we find them?
JerryNewcomb.com okay. has all of them,
okay.
And they're usually published every week at WorldNet Daily, Town Hall, Newsmax, Christian Post, and D. James Kennedy, djameskennedy.org. You can see them in all these different places and other outlets as well.
All right, well, that's a great place for us to pause. When we get back, we're going to talk to Dr. Jerry Newcomb about George Washington, and also... this is the first day of our yearly 12 Days of Christmas trivia contest. So get out your pens and paper. I'm going to be asking you these questions. They're not easy, but you do have a chance to win $1,000 if you are successful. So we're going to be right back. We're going to hear from Tanner Health System, our wonderful sponsor. And in 60 seconds, more with Dr. Jerry Newcomb. Stick around.
At Tanner, We're advancing health throughout West Georgia and East Alabama because we know that exceptional care isn't based on how many patients we serve, but how well we serve them. That's why we're focused on quality, delivering the best possible care for our patients. It's why we're expanding our clinical services and building new facilities to serve our growing community. And it's why we're looking beyond our hospitals and medical practices to develop sustainable wellness and preventive health programs in our region. What makes a hospital great has changed. It's not how many beds we have. It's how well we care for the neighbors who need them. Delivering the right care to every patient, every time, is how Tanner is advancing health with medicine beyond measure. Learn more at tanner.org or find a physician on our medical staff by calling 770-214-CARE.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Lori Wilson, still with you on Community Voice. Welcome to the second segment. All right, here I have here our questions for the 12 days of Christmas. And also, Dr. Jerry Newcomb, who is the senior producer of Truths That Transform, author of 30 books, and we're talking about his latest, American Amnesia. Jerry, would you like to hear this wonderful? If you can answer this question, I'm going to be so amazed. But anyway, so here's the deal. So it's a Christmas trivia question. Listen carefully. You can win up to $100 or maybe $1,000. It's kind of complicated, but it is for me. So here's the first one, and we're going to be doing this for 12 days. Who wrote the Christmas poem that ends, quote, "Maybe, when you come to think about it, grown-ups need Father Christmas far more than children do"? I'll repeat that. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, so here it is. Maybe, when you come to think about it, grown-ups need Father Christmas far more than children do. So, all right. Here's what you do. When you know the answer, you visit this station's website or just go to graticcommunications.com. You'll see a random Christmas trivia banner. You click on it, enter your name, email, phone number, blood type, maybe not blood type, and then you'll post your answer, and then one entry from the correct answers are going to get picked at random daily, and the daily winner is going to get 100 buckaroonies. And on December 15th, one of our 12 daily winners, along with a 13th selected at random that morning, will have a chance to win, to turn that $100 into 1,000 clams. So that'll be kind of cool. Jerry, do you have any idea who wrote that poem?
Oh, Van Dyke?
No. Okay. William Shakespeare? I don't know. No, I don't know. The sales manager who comes up with these questions is very eclectic. He likes people to have to work a little bit, do a little research for this.
It also sounds like, am I allowed to say who I think it really might be?
Sure. I will neither confirm nor disconfirm.
That sounds a little like D.K. Chesterton.
You know, you're right. I mean, it does sound like C.K. Chesterton, however, Chesterton, but
yeah.
I'm afraid that that is not correct.
Oh, okay.
The answer, I'll tell you off air, but the answer will blow your mind. Anyway, speaking of mind blowing, I don't know if that's a really good segue, but we're talking today about, so far, founding fathers and their religious views. And last time, on our last segment, we were talking about Thomas Jefferson and how misread he is in terms of his religious attitudes. So tell us now, Jerry, about George Washington.
George Washington was an 18th century Anglican, and he was very devout. And all that that entails, as far as 18th century Anglican, is very pro-Christian. I mean, the man was a big reader of the Bible and also of the 1662 version of the Book of Common Prayer from the Church of England. Mm. And, his writings are filled with this. In fact, I had the privilege to write a book with Dr. Peter Loback, and the book is called George Washington's Sacred Fire. And in that book, and it's a huge book, it's 1,200 pages, Glenn Beck said about 10 years ago or 8 years ago, every American needs to get this book. You know, it was just fascinating. He shot it up to number one on Amazon for several days in a row. But anyway, there's an appendix there that the co-author, Peter Loback, compiled of phrases from George Washington's own writings or speeches, private or public. And they're just phrases that come from the Bible. And you see over and over and over, Washington clearly in his phraseology would quote from the Bible and use biblical language. It's almost as if you cut the man, he would bleed scripture. And it's just a fascinating, fascinating point. But the idea that, oh, he was a deist, you know, is just not accurate. He didn't go around talking about Jesus all the time, but he certainly did talk about our Lord, you know, in indirect ways. He would be kind of fancy in his language. Dr. Loback uses the word Baroque. As part of the style. And he said, frankly, a lot of the evangelical ministers of that day also did the same thing. So they would talk about the great governor of the universe, or it's almost as if Washington didn't want to use the same word or phraseology for God in the same piece of writing. So he would use different phrases. And then we read those today through our 21st century lenses. And we think, oh, this guy was not a Christian. He was a deist. Oh, you know, he was a Mason. Well, wait a minute. He was involved with the Masons, but back then, the Masons actually had sermons delivered, at least on an annual basis, by evangelical ministers. Seriously. Huh. And in fact, there was one minister that Dr. Loback quotes who said that he was complaining around 1800 or so. He was saying, you know, I'm afraid our Mason chapters are getting a little less Christian in their influence, and this concerns me. And Washington, by the way, wasn't that devout necessarily as a Mason, but he certainly was as a Christian. He said in a letter in the 1790s, and he died 1799, he said that, I think I've actually gone to the lodge for four meetings in the last four decades. Uh-huh. That would be one a decade. In contrast with that, nobody disputes that he went to church regularly. Oh, another thing they say, well, yeah, but near the end of his life, he didn't take communion. That's because he didn't believe in the atonement. That's what they say. Well, near the end of his life, he did generally not go to communion. Now, they didn't have it on a weekly basis back then at the church, you know, the Anglican church in America where he was. It would only be a three or four times a year or whatever. And he would usually have to just take the kids, and then Martha would stay, and he would take the kids back home, you know, when they would do the communion part. But meanwhile, there were other times where he did participate in communion. And another thing is that during the war, the independence, the Revolutionary War, you got to remember that the head of the Church of England is the monarch. So here was George Washington involved in a rebellion against King George III, who was technically the head of the Church of England. And here was George Washington not willing to participate in, you know, in the communion, in that context or in that liturgy. But he did, in the meantime, go to other churches and participate in communion there. In fact, in Morristown, New Jersey, there's a Presbyterian church that has a stained glass window showing Washington participating in communion at the Morristown Presbyterian Church. So anyway, bottom line is, the people that try to remake Washington into a modern secular, they're wrong. And then another way that people try to discount him is say, oh, well, he was just a slave owner. Well, George Washington was a slave owner. He was part of the fourth generation of people that were owning slaves. And we look back at that and we say, that's so evil. By the way, Lori, future generations are going to look back at us and say, wait a minute, you had sonograms? Wait a minute, you had 3D sonograms? You had 4D sonograms? And you had abortion all over the place?
Yeah.
There were people who professed to be Christians and they had abortions. Are you kidding me? You know, we look back at Christians that owned slaves and we think, my goodness, how blind could they have been? But anyway, George Washington freed his slaves. Mm-hmm. He did it at his deathbed, but he did it. He freed his slaves and made provision for them as well. So it's important to read history in its context.
And that's so true. And yeah, I'm afraid that our students these days, they don't get this kind of deep dive, or and therefore it drives me crazy when people today, 2018, judge our forefathers through their own lens, not understanding the context in which our forefathers, I mean, you hear a lot the argument that, you know, the Declaration of Independence is fraudulent because if all men are created equal, why didn't they free the slaves immediately? And, you know, sometimes I'll tell my students, you know, all of us are descended from slaves. It's true. All of us are at one time or another. But it only took, what, 47 years after the founding of the nation for us to end it forever.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty good.
That's very good. And in fact, that was part of Lincoln's whole point in the Gettysburg Address. By the way, you mentioned 47 years ago. That was in direct reference to what? The Constitution? No.
Mm-mm.
That was in direct reference to the Declaration of Independence. Mm-hmm. Our forefathers conceived a new nation and you know, all men are created equal. Now we're testing the validity of that theory in light of the fact that these slaves amongst us are not being treated as if they were created equally. And so it's like Martin Luther King Jr. once said, America's problem is not with its creed. America's problem is with not living up to its creed. Mm. And I think we've made a lot of great strides since then. By the way, as far as Lincoln is concerned, you can almost look at him as the last of the founding fathers. He kind of tied up the loose ends that were left over from the Constitutional Convention. But we would not have become a country if the anti-slavery founding fathers had said, we got to get this out once and for all, end slavery as we become a new nation. And there were many that wanted to do that. And some of the states would not go along with them. And those states, by the way, would have said, well, we're just going to not join your union. And we're just going to separate. It's like John Eidsmo, the great author of Christianity and the Constitution, a law professor for a long time. He said that the founding fathers almost had the Civil War right there in the Constitutional Convention.
Yeah. Well, okay. And on that note, gosh, I wish we had about 3 hours to talk about all this stuff. But we're going to take another break and hear from Tanner Health System. We're talking to Jerry Newcomb, and you can look him up at Jerry Newcomb. That's NEWCOMBE, jerrynewcomb.com. Do that in the 60 seconds. We'll be away. We'll be right back.
At Tanner, we're advancing health throughout West Georgia and East Alabama because we know that exceptional care isn't based on how many patients we serve, but how well we serve them. That's why we're focused on quality, delivering the best possible care for our patients. It's why we're expanding our clinical services and building new facilities to serve our growing community. And it's why we're looking beyond our hospitals and medical practices to develop sustainable wellness and preventive health programs in our region. What makes a hospital great has changed. It's not how many beds we have. It's how well we care for the neighbors who need them. Delivering the right care to every patient, every time, is how Tanner is advancing health with medicine beyond measure. Learn more at tanner.org. or find a physician on our medical staff by calling 770-214-CARE.
We're going to jump right back into this last segment of Community Voice. Good morning, everyone. Lori Wilson with you, and we're talking to Dr. Jerry Newcomb. I'm looking at his website right now. It's For God and Country. Jerry Newcomb, For God and Country. Jerry, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Lori. Good to be with you.
I got a note from the owner of the microphones the other day. Our local university sent out an announcement that Mr. and Mrs. Santa Claus are going to be on campus. And nowhere in the press release did it say anything about Christmas. Didn't say the word Christmas.
Yeah.
And let's talk about this anti-Christmas thing.
Yeah. Well, it's the birthday of Jesus Christ, and he's not invited to it, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, this whole happy holidays thing, I used to get it until I realized how political it was. You know, just saying happy holidays and sort of squelching.
Even when you think about it, first of all, just look at the word itself, holiday. Holiday is spelled with one L. Yeah, exactly. It's a contraction of holy day. And what holy day would that be? Oh, yeah, Christmas, when Jesus was born. Next question. You know, everybody's birth, everybody's year, you know, their birthday, the date of year, 2018, it's all in reference to when Jesus was born, 2018 years ago. So
right.
It's so amazing. Jesus Christ is the central figure of history. And it's because of Christianity in so many ways that our culture ultimately was created. You mentioned universities, the local university. The phenomenon of universities gets back to Jesus Christ. In 1200, the first of the prototypes of the universities was created in part to reconcile Christian theology with the newly rediscovered writings of Aristotle around 1200. And the Sorbonne was the prototype. And then there was also Oxford, and then later from that grew Cambridge, and later from that Harvard and Yale and Dartmouth and Princeton. So anyway, the Christianity essentially created the university as a phenomenon. And yet today, the one person, in a sense, not invited in the university is Jesus Christ. Christianity, of course, invented Christmas, but Jesus is not invited, you know, at Christmas time. You mentioned Santa. What is Santa? Santa is short, Santa Claus, St. Nicholas. This was a real person who lived in the 300s in what is today Turkey, in Myra, Turkey. He was even a bishop in the Christian church. And so anyway, and his Christianity, his generosity grew out of his love for Jesus Christ. There's so many positive things that Jesus has given us, and yet he's the one fellow, you know, that's not invited to all these things. It's just, it's tremendously ironic. And what's even more ironic is that all of us will one day die and give an account before Jesus, you know. And so, you know, can you imagine, Lori, all these people that shut the kingdom of heaven in men's faces? They won't go in, but they prevent other people from going in. And then one day they're going to have to give an account of to Jesus himself on all these things. It's amazing.
It is amazing. It seems to be, and I wish we had more time. We only have a couple minutes left, but it seems that the Academy has created its own sort of awful religion of political correctness, and it's a very shallow doctrine. It's not going to take them very far, I think.
Oh yeah, I mean, actually, by their own standards, where basically truth is relative, morality is relative, how can you say that something is wrong? So even if you say, okay, racism is like the great evil in our day,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
But how can you say ultimately that racism is wrong if nothing is wrong? We know inherently that racism is wrong. Prejudice, it's wrong to be prejudiced. This is wrong, but why is it wrong? It's wrong because it violates what Jesus said. Treat others as you would have them treat you. Do to others as you would have them do to you. For this sums up the law and the prophets. Oh, and by the way, you can bet your bippy that Thomas Jefferson was compiling the verses he wanted the Indians to know. That was one of them,
mm-hmm.
The saying of Jesus in the Golden Rule.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all there in Matthew. Is it Matthew 5?
It's Matthew 5 through 7 is the Sermon on the Mount. And that particular verse I just quoted was Matthew 7, verse 12.
Well, we have 1 minute left, Dr. Jerry Newcomb, and I want to give it to you. What would you like our listeners to be thinking about today as they go about their Thursday?
Well, one of the things I describe in the book in a chapter called Away with the Manger, I talk about an outreach called American Nativity Scene, and I describe how, this is all on page 328, how they're providing a service to get manger scenes in communities that would like them. They'll provide the substance and everything and do the hard work if you want it. And then meanwhile, the Thomas More Society will provide the legal backup to protect you, you know, because these things are legal.
Okay.
In fact, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of it. So we have a whole thing
about
that.
Let's look into that then. We're out of time, Jerry. Thank you so much for being with us. It's Jerry Newcomb for God and Country. The new book is American Amnesia, a collection of columns. Thank you so much for being with us.